Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
All right, everybody, let's keep the fun rolling on this Thursday edition of the Lombardi Line alongside former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. Got a great final hour on tap. We got a No Way, No Doubt segment coming at you in a little bit. Lots of trade deadline talk, of course, Michael, with the deadline coming up next Thursday. Should they or shouldn't they be moving on and rebuilding, and which teams need to go all in at this point? Always a fun conversation. The final half hour, we'll get Palms Pressing 3, all things from our guy, Mike Palm, VP of Operations here at Circa Resort and Casino, where I'm broadcasting from. But where we're going to start off is, of course, primetime Thursday night football on everybody's TV screens later on tonight. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Buffalo Bills going head to head. And this has been some one-way traffic toward Buffalo, but we talked about it earlier, Michael. It feels a whole lot more like a fate of Tampa than it does a confident push. Like, I really believe in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers right now, because the last 3 weeks they have shown us they're amazing. That's not what it is.
Well, you know, there was a time where everybody believed in the Buccaneers. Remember when they played Philly? Everybody was all over them on Philly. Last week, everybody was all over them on Atlanta. I think this line's a reflection of the sting of what Tampa's done to some people, right? I mean, they went into New Orleans and they were the dog there, and they ended up playing well. They dominated New Orleans in that game. This one's strange because there's nothing that has happened in this game in the last 3 weeks that would indicate Buffalo's 9 points better than anybody. Now, Josh Allen's great, don't get me wrong, but this team is really kind of beat up. With Ed Oliver not going to play tonight, without any tight ends on the roster other than Dalton Kincaid, who's really going to have to assume a different role. They're going to have to modify their offense on a short week. So it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out. The strength of Tampa Bay is their defense. It wasn't last week where Desmond Ridder threw the ball effectively on them, but typically their front's good. They get pressure. Vita Vea needs to play for them to be good tonight, but they're good. And everybody's betting the over, which is kind of interesting because prime unders have really been hitting. You know, primetime unders are 16-7 this season. And since 2019, they're 155 and 102 and 3. Yet everybody wants the over here tonight. We think we're going to get a lot of football tonight. Well, I do think this. It is going to be 65 and no wind.
Absolutely great to keep in mind. I love when we get our regularly scheduled programming of Michael's weather report, and that it's not the girl named Stormy doing it, because you know what? I can't handle that. I can only handle so much, Michael, but great to keep in mind. And you mentioned the injuries there. Yeah, Ed Oliver, I haven't seen an official out, but obviously missed last week and he's questionable. And we already know all the other issues and holes on that defense from an injury standpoint for the rest of the season. So going to need some other guys to step up from that standpoint. For Vita Vea, reports have him as truly a 50-50 game time decision going into the game tonight, and that'll be key. Baker Mayfield, who was on the injury report this week with a knee, he's expected to play, as is Chris Godwin, who had a neck injury distinction on the practice report this week. He's expected not to have any limitations going into tonight. So all good food for thought as you get set for this game. But I really, Michael, thought that after the previous 2 weeks going into last Sunday that Buffalo was going to get it together then. And so, like, it felt like there was no better opponent to get right against defensively than the New England Patriots, and the lack of offensive production that they've had with Mac Jones and with Bill O'Brien as offensive coordinator. And yet they were able to go up and down the field on him, and it started early. Like, Buffalo was behind the eight ball right away in that game. And granted, we saw at the end that they could put together two scoring drives in a matter of 4 or 5 minutes. But then you still allowed Mac Jones to go down the field and win it for you. So, I'm not a believer in Buffalo right now. This is just a hard stay away spread for me tonight.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you like Buffalo, you know your quarterback Josh Allen's got 59 career wins in the regular season, and 45 of those wins have been by 7 or more points. So you know he's really good at covering numbers, especially, but this is getting away from you a little bit. You also know that he turns the ball over, that this game tonight will feature two quarterbacks that have the most turnovers in the National Football League since 2018. Baker's got 68. Josh Allen's got 67. Now, don't forget, Baker was the first pick in this draft, in the 18 draft, over Josh Allen. A lot of people forget that, right? Like, it was Baker ahead of Allen in this draft. which isn't the case any longer.
Yeah. Oh, how the times have changed.
Can Cleveland get anything right on quarterbacks? I mean, think about Cleveland and their quarterback derby. I mean, as I just said that, right? They turned down Josh Allen. They turned down Deshaun Watson originally when he was coming out. Remember, they gave the pick to Houston. And then they turned down Josh Allen. And, you know, and now we're – and they signed Watson on the most expensive contract in football. And now where are they? It's just a sad thing.
That's what's crazy, Michael, is how much they paid to get Deshaun Watson. And it's this version of Watson that they're getting when they could have done it all. Like that is an interesting thought that never even crossed my mind, to be honest with you. And speaking to that, let's go to the Sunday slate, because there are a lot of numbers that have been on the move in addition to this Thursday night football game. And one of them being that Cleveland Browns game against the Seattle Seahawks, because on a Wednesday, we already know that Deshaun Watson's not going to play and it'll be PJ Walker back under center.
Yeah. And you know, look, that they have no choice. To me, I keep saying maybe they should trade for Derrick Henry if they could get him, because they're not going to win. And we were talking about this on the podcast today, Stormy. This line went up to 4, which is not surprising. If you're Cleveland, you have spent the most cash money of any team in the National Football League this year. They have spent, so you can say what you want about the Haslam family meddling, all that. They've spent the most money of any team. And it's not, you know, the Jets and Houston are this two or three. Why Houston? I don't know. But the Jets went all in. Cleveland went all in. Now that they're all in and they don't have Chubb, they're going to lose 4. Watson's a mess, right? What do they do? Like, I got to think you play to your strength. You try to add another defensive player and you try to add a running back, because those are the only two. You're going to have to mask the quarterback, because the next 3 years, you're not getting away from Watson. He's on your team at $63 million on your cap.
And I haven't seen an update today, Michael, but even Kareem Hunt didn't practice yesterday either, just furthering your point on the running back position.
No, I don't think he'll play. No. I mean, he's going to play. I think he will play. But look, at the end of the day, they got to get Dorian Thompson-Robinson to go. They got to get him to become a better player. He was a disaster in the first game with his 3 interceptions, just like Aiden O'Connell didn't play well for the Raiders. So it's young players that are going to do this. But they're going really not in a direction that they can win with in terms of PJ Walker. I mean, he had a nice last drive. He got bailed out. But I think, to me, as I sit there and look at this from a long lens, you're stuck with Watson. And either Stefanski gets him better and plays better, which hasn't happened, or we're going to be in a lot of trouble.
And despite what we saw last week from the Cleveland Browns, we know that this is an elite defense, and it would be such a shame to waste that, especially given what you have invested at the quarterback position. So this week, again, that line has now moved to Browns getting 4, taken on the Seahawks, total 38. We also learned yesterday that Brock Purdy, coming back from that game against the Vikings on Monday night, was experiencing concussion-like protocols. They got it checked out. Concussion-like symptoms, excuse me. They got it checked out. He is in the protocol. We have not seen a quarterback that is placed in the protocol that week eventually go on and play that coming Sunday. So the expectation is it'll be Sam Darnold under center for the San Francisco 49ers. And they have moved from a 5.5-point favorite against the Bengals to 3.5, total 43.5.
A lot at stake here, too. The 49ers' 10-game cover streak at home is in jeopardy here. You know, and they've been very good on short rest. Look, I think, to me, they have to run the football. The last week was the first week during this season where they haven't been able to run the football effectively. I think they ran for 65 yards. 17 came on Purdy's scramble. And the last 2 weeks now, they've scored 17 points in each game. So they haven't been dominating in the point total either. And you can make the case, well, they gave up 22 points, the most since the Rams got 23 in week 2. But look, we know that last play at the end of the half kind of was fortunate. This team's still a really good team, and they're going to be a good team. And Cincinnati can't run the ball. And I just think it's a tough matchup for Cincinnati, no matter who plays quarterback for them, because Cincinnati has struggled to pass protect. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know they put a lot of money in their line, and I know people think that they've improved in their pass protection. But when you watch them play on tape, Burrow has gotten sacked. You know, he gets sacked way too much. his sack percentage. It's challenging in terms of where he is. I mean, last year he was at 2.38 sacks percentage. Okay. This year, now I know he can't move. This year, you know, he's at 6.06. I mean, that's a 4-point differential in sack percentage. So that's a real issue. And if they don't fix that, that's a problem.
Yeah, and you know that's going to be a major emphasis for the San Francisco defense coming off a game where it was their first all season where they had not had a sack, talking about their matchup with the Minnesota Vikings, only got hands on Kirk Cousins 7 times, which was their fewest in a game all season long. So that's going to be a huge point of emphasis for the defense coming into this one. And also, we talk so much about this 49ers team being one that needs to play from ahead. The Christian McCaffrey early fumble put them in a position they're not used to. And so make sure you strike while the iron's hot early. You all Also, before we started up this hour, got news Jimmy Garoppolo is expected to start after missing last week. He's going to be at practice today. Josh McDaniels saying, quote, as long as nothing goes the other way. So that's our verbiage for, you know, barring a setback type of a thing. And then also Tyreek Hill, after missing practice yesterday with a hip injury, he's back on the practice field today. Saw lots of videos from local beat writers. He's dancing. He's looking fine, which is excellent news for the Miami Dolphins as they get set for their game with the Patriots today. That music is coming through, which means we got to hit the break here, take our first time out of this hour. But when we come back, Michael, it's time for No Way or No Doubt. Get excited, my friend.
Oh, I can't wait.
That's what I like to hear. We'll be right back.
Former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
With all four major sports in action, there's no better time to be a sports bettor. And with our new Sports Equinox special, no better time to become a VSiN Pro subscriber. Sign up now. You get full VSiN Pro access to everything we do through May 1st for only $120, including daily best bets, unlimited access to our betting splits, plus our exclusive betting content throughout the World Series, college football, the rest of the NFL season, March Madness, the NBA and NHL regular seasons, as well as the NFL draft coming up in the summer. Don't miss this limited time offer. VSiN.com/subscribe is how you can sign up now.
Do you disagree with these takes?
No way.
No way.
Or do you approve?
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. No doubt in my mind.
No diggity, no doubt.
It's time to ask Michael Lombardi, no way or no doubt.
To it. Buffalo is 7-1 to win the AFC. They're tied for the third shortest odds with the Baltimore Ravens behind Kansas City and Miami, Michael. But we know how vulnerable this team has looked, specifically defensively, since losing their heart and soul on D, Matt Milano, Daquan Jones, Trey White, just to name a few, and some other guys still dinged up as we get set for Thursday Night Football tonight. But no way or no doubt, Michael, the Buffalo Bills need to be buyers at the trade deadline coming up next week to be competitive for an AFC title.
I think there's no doubt about that. I think they need to be strategically aggressive, and they need to kind of figure out what they can add to their defense that certainly could help them. They're on every level, their defense could use some help. Ed Oliver coming back would help. Daquan Jones is doubtful that he'll come back, so that's a problem. But yeah, I think they need to be a little bit more aggressive here, because I think what we're seeing is that Josh Allen has done a wonderful job of covering up the deficiencies of their team by his play. Perfect example last week. You know, we talk about this offensive line, and they've made some changes, but he got hit a bunch last week. 40% of the time he was under pressure, and he wasn't very good. The thing that saves him, like always, is his ability to get out of pressure, his ability to not get tackled. And that's a hard thing to do when you're playing him. But if they played anybody else but Josh Allen under center, they would probably be a team looking to pick in the top 10.
Yeah, I agree. Buffalo's got to do something here soon. And with their record right now sitting right in that seventh spot in the AFC, teetering on the edge of not even being in playoff position right now, which is crazy to think about. Let's continue this trade deadline talk, because the Tennessee Titans recently traded away Kevin Byard to the Philadelphia Eagles and appear to be open for business as they get set for a little bit of a shifting and rebuild. No way or no doubt, Michael. The Titans should trade away Derrick Henry before the deadline.
I think they should trade away Derrick Henry before the deadline. They should try to trade Hopkins before the deadline. Yeah, I think they should. Now, you know, you'd say, well, that's not fair to the young quarterback to see what he can do. Well, you can figure out what a quarterback's doing and how he's playing without doing anything other than just, you know, you don't need Hopkins there to do it. If somebody's willing to give you a good deal, Hopkins only makes $1 million. You paid the signing bonus, so the cost is sunk, so you can get rid of him. So my sense of it is if somebody calls and offers you something, are you going to sign Henry back to a huge deal next year? Because he kind of locks you in to running the football all the time. And you could see they want to get the Spears a little bit more. So, yeah, I think they should trade him.
Yeah, Tajay Spears out of Tulane, his backup, a very, very talented young man. See him get an opportunity. And to your point about the young quarterback, it appears we're going to see Will Levis get his first start this weekend. And if I'm doing my own No Way or No Doubt, I say no doubt Derrick Henry should go to the Dallas Cowboys. I would love to see that and how he would reboot that running game over there as a compliment, as the guy with Tony Pollard, and kind of have those two different styles of backs again. All right, keeping it moving here. The Carolina Panthers have their Super Bowl coming up this weekend, taking on the Houston Texans. Yeah. It's going to be the top two quarterbacks taken in this last draft going head to head. And this matchup, of course, has reinvigorated the debate of who's the better quarterback, who's going to be the better pro long term. Before we get to the big question, let's hear what Carolina Panthers head coach Frank Reich had to say about his young QB and Stroud.
We got the guy we wanted to get, and couldn't be happier about that in every way. And I would say this, I'm happy for CJ, you know, that he's had six good games. And I have no doubt he'll have many more good games. But I know this, when it comes to evaluating quarterbacks or any position, it's years, not weeks. You know, you can't put a label on a guy after 6 weeks or even a year.
And I think that was probably very important for Bryce Young specifically to hear after all of the things that have been talked about with regard to whether or not his coach wanted him. So No Way or No Doubt, Michael, the Carolina Panthers did make the right decision when they drafted Bryce Young over CJ Stroud. What do you think?
I think they did. No doubt they did. I think this, what Frank said is so true. Weeks is not the time. I mean, Bryce Young has not looked bad. His timing, his ability to see the field is very good. He's got great rhythm to his game, but they can't protect. The offense is static. They don't move. He's in shotgun all the time. And I think, to me, they haven't done enough for him. And forget about, you know, they don't have great receivers. That's not the issue. The issue is putting him in position to where he can succeed. Look, last week, and I've been critical of Mac Jones, but last week what New England did was they threw the ball in the middle of the field where Mac Jones can throw the football. They got into some bunch formations. They got him under center. They did things that make it a little bit easier for Mac to play. That's the key to football. That's the key to being good offensively. That's why Kyle's so good. That's why Sean McVay's so good. I don't think he's had this right now. If Sean McVay was coaching Bryce Young, we'd be talking about him at a high, high level.
Yeah, if you're looking at the Carolina Panthers, I think it's extremely unfair to point to Bryce Young and say he's the problem. This is a team that's got a lot of problems right now, and the book has yet to be written on the type of pro that he's going to be. There has been some money, though, coming in on CJ Stroud's side of things, and the Houston Texans now up to a 3.5-point road favorite at Bank of America Stadium coming up this weekend. Now, we talked already a good bit about Deshaun Watson and the Cleveland Browns, where things sit right now. Watson was, of course, ruled out of this Sunday's game against the Seahawks already yesterday from head coach Kevin Stefanski. It'll be his fourth missed game of the season. He left week 7 versus the Colts after only 12 plays. He was 1 of 5 with nearly 2 interceptions and is under contract in Cleveland through 2026. And we obviously know the big money implications there. No Way or No Doubt, Michael, Deshaun Watson is the long-term answer for the Cleveland Browns at quarterback.
No way, but there's no doubt he has to be.
The perfect answer.
You can't, there's no getting around it. You know, look, here's what I said on the podcast today. I said, whenever you make a trade, you have to understand what your safety margin is in the trade. You have to ask yourself the question, what happens if we're wrong on Watson? What happens if he gets hurt? What happens if we're half wrong on Watson? What happens if, you know, he has another character issue? All those things. And that should lead you to how you set up the contract. Gives you some safety. the Cardinals did it with, as bad as that deal was, the Cardinals did it for their safety programs within the Kyler Murray contract. But this team didn't do that. So for the next 3 years, they're looking at $63 million cap hit on their team every single year. There's no way. He has to be the answer for them. And what's going to happen is, what we'll see is, they'll be firing coaches left and right to try to make him a better player.
And we talk about the money so much, but also the first round picks that were given up in this situation. It's just really unfortunate what we've seen from Deshaun Watson since he's come back from that 2-year layoff. He has not been any semblance of what we saw in Houston and the playmaking ability he had. All right, one more. Let's go to the San Francisco 49ers, Michael. They remain a 2-1 favorite to be the NFC champion and rep the conference in this year's Super Bowl. But obviously, they've dropped their last two games. All of a sudden, people have some questions of if they really are as good as we thought they were. No way or no doubt, Michael, the 49ers are still the top team in the NFC.
No doubt they are. I think they're even with Philly, but I think their balance is better. They have to stay healthy, just like Philly does. But no doubt they have a really good team. Look, they're two plays away. They're two plays away from being undefeated. If the kid makes the kick in Cleveland, and if Steve doesn't make the call at the end of the first half, which I'm sure he regrets. So, yeah, I'm not overreacting. I think they'll bounce back this week with or without Purdy.
Michael, what still kills me about, even with the all-out blitz in the situation that it was, Charvarius Ward still almost got the interception. Like, he still could have made a play. The ball was in his hands. And then, you know, Jordan Addison scores and it's over before it even begins, it feels like, after that. But I'm still mad. I'm not going to get over it anytime soon, I don't think, Michael.
I can tell. It's only one game. It's going to help you.
I know.
You know, their confidence isn't waning. One thing about when you lose a game like that and you go into your team meeting room, it helps you win the next week because people are angry. If you win a game on a trick, on a play like that, there's a sense of, oh, we got this. Look, we played bad, we did it. You know, you need anger every week to be a good team.
You know, and I kind of liked Mike Somich, who joined us in hour one, his perspective on that 49ers-Browns game, that it was kind of that slug back and forth defensive type of a game. Maybe that just took a lot out of both teams from a physicality standpoint, and that both of them defensively should play better this week as well. So again, Brock Purdy, though, looks like he's going to be unavailable in concussion protocol. Sam Darnold expected to get the start. Mike Palm, our starter here for the final half hour.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
All right, everybody, we're back here on the Lombardi Line. Don't forget, on DraftKings Sportsbook this week, new customers can bet $5 and pocket $200 in bonus bets instantly. Plus, all customers can get a no-sweat same-game parlay every day. All you got to do is download the app, use the promo code VEGAS when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. We are rolling along here alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonatoni, with you, and as we roll on live from Circa Resort and Casino, no better person to have with us than VP of Operations here at Circa, Mike Palm, who joins the program back on a Thursday. It's been too long because, like, you were out of the office, Michael was out of the office, I was just here all alone. I missed you.
Yeah, I'm lucky, you know, Dustin Pedroia didn't want to come on at 1:30 today that I get to get back to the desk.
We had some bad luck with Big Poppy. Can confirm.
Yeah, Big Poppy. Has anybody seen Big Poppy at all? We have any idea where he is?
He's trying to put a cowboy hat on Jeter on the playoffs.
Have you seen those Club Poppy videos?
Mike, I want to ask you.
Go ahead, Michael.
Before we start with whatever direction you want to go in, I want to ask you, you're really good at this. What would be your survivor pick this week?
Well, that's what I had prepared here for you, Michael, because
you did.
For me, it's interesting because it was, you know, not insignificant. We lost almost a third of the field last week, 552 out of the 1789. So now we're down to 1237. We only have 13% left. Your ticket that you bought for $1,000 now theoretically is worth $7,500.
Yeah.
Right. So, and there's still seven people that have 10 entries left, which is interesting, right?
Wow.
That's
well, one of them went out with 10 on the Bucks last week.
Ooh. That's a tough one.
Well, I'd be a little bit upset with Bowles running hurry up and letting Atlanta have another possession.
Yeah.
They didn't have to do that. They could have bled the clock down.
What I thought was just fascinating looking at the Circa entries and eliminations last week was that, you know, Seattle obviously gets through with the win, and that's the big one. Yeah. But then six of the next seven, I want to say it is, all of those out, all of those other favorites that people were buying in on.
Well, Bills, 49ers, Raiders, Rams, Saints, Commanders, Packers. What's interesting also to me, Michael, is because usually the two tenets most people try to stick by is you don't play road teams, don't play division games. 307 out of the 552 were road teams, with a big chunk of that being the Bills, obviously, at Foxborough. So here's the debate for me. And we can talk in general about how it's going to be. Buffalo, the Bills... Only 201 of the 1,200 have them available even and for tonight. Dolphins versus Patriots, only 215 have the Dolphins. So the AFC East teams, are very few people have them left. 636 have Baltimore playing in Glendale against Arizona. 1,082, almost everybody has the Chargers for Sunday night against the Bears. And then the Lions, I think people would say for Thanksgiving. But if you wanted to use them and save the Cowboys, 660 still have them available for the Monday night against the Raiders. So here's my thing, Michael. And I understand Amal and I kind of debated this yesterday on Sharp Money with Patrick. He would take the Chargers and save Baltimore because you're probably not going to use the Chargers. And I get it. You're not going to use the Chargers again. And the Chargers are at home. There's other spots to use Baltimore in the year. Maybe. But if I lost my shot at $9 million with Staley, I couldn't forgive myself. So if I only had one entry, I would take Baltimore because I'm not going down with Staley. Look at the game in Kansas City. He's a defensive coach. I don't see it. I don't see it at all.
Yeah,
we can talk game management all the time. I'm not going out with him. I don't know what your impression was of the Division II quarterback. Well, I thought he added a little pep to the Bears. I thought he energized the team. Obviously, I saw a breakdown a guy did in the graphics. He's a second and a half quicker to plan on his 5 and 7 step drops than Fields, which gives him a lot more time to react to the defensive coverage. The 3 step drops, they're the same. But he did a breakdown on film on Twitter that I thought was very good. And the kids seemed to, you know, move a little bit with his legs, but not too much to help him out. So I know now they have a little tape on him. But I just couldn't do it. And I don't know if I'm going to take the Bears in 8.5 or not. But I'm not going out with the Chargers. I'd take Baltimore.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think if you're saying that, which I don't disagree with it, you're never taking the Chargers again. This is your one last chance to take the Chargers. So you're basically playing with 31. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what you're doing. And I think that's probably smart. I think the one thing we have learned, and I keep saying this, and I know Namal has his theory on Survivor. Stormy and I talked about this. Looking at Buffalo, like, they're not a gimme putt anymore, right? So when you save these teams, sometimes they're not as good when you think you need them as they are. So I'm not sure saving is really a good thing.
It's interesting, the Buffalo debate, Michael, because Amal and I discussed the question was, we now do a debate segment in the second one that I'm on with them on Wednesday called Palm versus the Prince. And Patrick and Dustin then grade the debate who won it. It's like a crossfire. But it was over under 8.5 teams can win the Super Bowl. We were both on under. So the debate became who are the, you know, I said there's five. We both agreed there's five that very realistically could win it. San Francisco, Philadelphia, Kansas City, Baltimore, and Cincinnati. We both agreed on those five. We both have Detroit on a fringe, although if you push me, I say no, because they haven't even won a playoff game yet. It's too big a leap to get to the Super Bowl, right? The debate came down to and the Browns. We both had the Browns, if they can get any kind of quarterback play. But the debate down to who's the other one that's a possible fringe. I said Miami. He said Buffalo. My argument is Buffalo, much better 2 years ago and last year, couldn't get it done. They were 13 seconds away in Kansas City, couldn't get it done. They had Cincinnati come to snowy Buffalo last year, got punched in the mouth, couldn't get it. This team is worse. Why are they going to the Super Bowl? I don't include Buffalo. I have Miami on the list before Buffalo.
Well, they both have flaws, but I think Buffalo flaws are more fatal. Mm-hmm. I think Buffalo flaws are really... I said this, Mike. You put Josh Allen on the Raiders and that's Buffalo's team. You put, you take Garoppolo and put him on Buffalo, that's the Raiders team. Nobody would, they'd be like, oh, Buffalo's too good. Oh, no, the Raiders have a really good receiver. They've got a good rush guy. Their offensive line isn't very good. Maybe the Buffalo's better in the defensive line, but the difference is Josh Allen makes everybody better. That makes, it makes America think they're better than they really are. When you break down Buffalo and you watch them, they're not very good. I mean, when you give up 5.3 yards a game rushing on average, that's just not one game. That's over seven games. You're not very good. You're small. You're not very physical. You know, and I know they missed Ed Oliver last week, but still, I mean, Josh Allen covers up all their sins.
I'm interested to hear your thoughts on the Lions, though, a little bit more, because especially since you have the Cincinnati Bengals in there, and we know they've struggled, but of course they can come on with Joe Burrow being healthy at any point. But Cincinnati was still a team that hadn't been in a position in a really, really long time to be good, and then they were able to do it. So why are you so out on maybe Detroit being able to make a push?
Because they haven't won a playoff game yet. You don't. You, it's a step ladder, just like the NBA is a step ladder. You have to get to a certain point and then overcome different things. Jimmy Johnson's Cowboys didn't go from 1-15 to a Super Bowl team. They had to go to 9-7 and then 11-5 and then 12-4. And you keep having to get better. I compare it to when Pritch, you know, the year they won the national championship, when Pritch denies there was a clip on the Ishmael punt return. The year before, they played Notre Dame in the Orange Bowl as well, right, for the national championship. And Notre Dame dominated them in the second half. They weren't ready for the 40-minute halftime in the Orange Bowl. They didn't. You have to be there and do things. You have to experience a road playoff game. How are the Lions going to go on the road and win in Philadelphia and in San Francisco, having not won even one playoff game yet? I just think it's a bridge too far to get there. And we're going to talk in the Pressing 3 about your takeaways from the game at Baltimore, because I want to pick your brain on that, what the lasting takeaways are. But I just think it's, you have to get closer than having not been a playoff team or won a playoff game just to go to a Super Bowl and win it.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. I think there has to be residual, you know, there's a momentum. You've got to get good, then you've got to get better. You go, you gradually go there. You just don't all of a sudden become an overnight sensation. They're going to have to go through it. And then the best thing that happened to them was losing to Baltimore. They're going to need some of those too.
I know we got about a minute. I want to pick your brain a little bit about something you said in the last segment about if Bryce Young was playing for McVay, he'd be playing at a high level. Do you think if Bryce Young instead of Matthew Stafford was the quarterback for the Rams right now, they would have a better chance of making the playoffs?
Well, I would think no, because Stafford's, I thought, done some really good things. They're just not good enough. They can't protect them. I mean, Stafford's not going to make it another 10 weeks. It's going to be a hard game for him down in Dallas because of it. I mean, they've done a good job of hiding their warts, but they've been now out there. You know, people just keep wanting to dismiss Pittsburgh as not a good team. Pittsburgh is a good team. I hate to break it to you.
Yeah, we talked earlier today, albeit briefly, about him having the best home ATS record as a head coach, Tomlin.
I know Hayden Fry adopted the colors because they wanted to bring the winning tradition of the Steelers to Iowa, but they're like Iowa. They win. They find a way to win these games in all the little ways, Michael.
Yep, they do.
We've kept saying they're Tomlining their way to win.
You can't ever have a losing season.
I don't know if you heard, but yes. We will be right back here on the Lombardi Line. Don't go anywhere. We'll get the latest update on the number for Thursday Night Football and Palms Pressing 3 when we return. This is the Lombardi Line on Visa.
NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Before you make your next bet, be sure to visit VSiN.com and check out the current betting splits data. Want to know where the money and bets are moving for every game? The betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 5 minutes, so you can see changes in all the action. Find out where the public's betting based on the number of tickets and where the money doesn't match the public opinion. You can check out not just today's action, but future events as well. Betting splits, another Either way, VSiN's here to make you a more informed, better year-round. You can check out those betting splits for every game at VSiN.com. Mike Palm joining us here on the desk as we wrap things up with the Lombardi line, and we will get Palm's pressing three here in a moment. But real quickly before we do, just the update on Thursday Night Football, where you guys sit. Speaking of splits, where you guys sit right now?
That's where Elliot tells us we're at 10 minus 105. So I guess that's where we're at.
Wow.
I'm going to say that I'll bet you it's not in a top 10 of our decisions this weekend. I just don't, it won't be a very heavily bet game.
Is the Thursday night usually heavily bet, Mike?
Depends on the matchup. And they haven't been really attractive matchups. So, and it also depends on what's going on. Now, you don't have a baseball leading into it, right? Like, you know, you've had baseball leading into it. So that helps it because it gets crowds in the book and helps the over-the-counter, right? You've got a decent hockey schedule, two nights off the frenzy. With no big lead in, probably not.
Hey, Michael, at least you can count on Al Michaels not. I know that's what you look forward to every Thursday night, and
it's going
to
be sensational again tonight. And the beautiful thing is we won't get the sweater underneath to hide it because it's going to be 65 and it'll be beautiful in Buffalo tonight. So we're going to get a straw. I mean, we'll get a great knot tonight. I don't know what he's going to eat in Buffalo, but maybe they flew Toscanos in. I don't know.
Carrots. Probably he needs carrots.
Ten here in Circa. We're seeing some nines out there, but largely moving to 9.5. In favor of the Bills tonight, total 43.5. All right, let's get to Palm's pressing three. Mike, let's do it.
Okay, Michael, I want to ask a few questions regarding the last play of the first half at the Hubert H. Humphrey Dome on Monday night. It's 10-7, Minnesota. They have the ball with 16 seconds, 3rd and 6 from their own 40. Minnesota has no timeouts remaining. Obviously, you got to be in a very soft zone. You tackle anybody inbounds, the half is over. Steve Wilks calls a zero blitz and rushes 7. Cousins gets the pass off. Charvarius Ward somehow doesn't intercept it. And Jordan Addison walks to the end zone as the clock expires to end the first half and probably cost the 49ers the game. It's the first time that a team has rushed 7 with the opponent in their own territory in the final 30 seconds of a half or game since week 11 of 2020. Kyle Shanahan, in his press conference, said Wilkes definitely made the wrong call. He lost track of the time. So here are my questions, and I'll ask them, and then you can answer. Mm-hmm. Number one, is Kyle Shanahan listening to the defensive play calls? Or as an offensive-minded head coach, is he not? Number two, should all coaches have the headsets on for offensive and defensive play calls? And number three, if he has the headsets on, isn't he calling a timeout and saying, get out of this zero blitz? Go ahead, Michael.
The answer to the questions are, first of all, he probably isn't listening to the calls. He's too busy worrying about what he's going to run or what he's going to talk about offensively. Remember, most of these guys are coordinators that are being paid like head coaches. And so the subcontractor of the team, Steve Wilks, is going to do what he does. He is paid to stop the other team, stop scoring, and, you know, and get the ball back. That's basically what he's paid to do. He's not aware of game situations. Everybody complains about Kyle for throwing the ball in the Atlanta Super Bowl, when in reality, that was on Dan Quinn. Dan Quinn should have stepped in and said, hey, Kyle, the clock's our opponent, not the Patriots. But that doesn't happen in the NFL anymore. We've lost that. We don't have situational football anymore. The New York Football Giants give two plays to Tyrod Taylor, and they expect him to check into the right play with no time on the clock. Like, who's minding the store? This drives me crazy every single week. This was at the highest level. It was at the highest level. Worse? I could tell you worse than this. This was only 7 points. What Shane Steichen did in Indianapolis was 10 points. Now, nobody's going to say a bad word about Steichen because he's a great coach. He's a great offensive coach. But his mismanagement at the end of the game, you could talk all about the bad calls, and they were horrible calls. But his mismanagement at the end of the game cost his team 10 points, and they lost by 1. So this is an epidemic in the league. This is what the league wants. The owners want subcontractors. They don't want guys managing the game. They do not. They want subcontractors. And what the league is missing more than anything, they're missing people that understand how to build teams and people and coaches that understand how to manage games.
In a year gone by, in an era gone by, Michael, did that head coach have purview of the play calls on both sides? Is this new in this era?
Absolutely. I mean, look, I've been on the headset with two of the greatest coaches of all time, Nick Saban and Bill Belichick. And Bill might say to Nick, heat him up here. He might say to Josh McDaniels, stick a run in here. He's not calling the run. He's saying, hey, I want to slow the game down. And Josh calls the run. Or Nick calls a blitz. Hey, Nick, let's just let him blow. You know, let him play. It goes back to, think about the game. Think about the game you cited earlier, the 13-second game. Why does Buffalo rush four players? Why would you rush four? What do you want to accomplish? You don't want to, you could lovely to get a sack. What you want is Mahomes to hold the ball. You want him to hold the ball so he can't throw it. So the longer the play goes, the better it is for you. They get less plays, but naturally they rush four. You know what they should have done is rush one. Rush one. But they don't. Situational football is a lost art. I talk to former head coaches about it all the time. I mean, it's mind-blowing. What's going on in Washington? Ron Rivera's on the headset listening, and he's got an offensive coordinator calling every single pass play 18 yards down the field, and you can't protect the quarterback. And Ron doesn't seem to have a problem with it. If I was Sam Howell's dad, I would be calling Ron up and say, you going to protect my kid or not?
Great answer. Let's move on. Question
number
two.
Number two.
Might be our last. Baltimore on Sunday. I watched every play of the first half. Total evisceration. What's the bigger lasting lesson? Is it that the Lions are still a ways away from being a top team in the league? Or is it that this healthy Baltimore team is this good? Or here's your third option. NFC teams just don't beat Lamar because they have no experience preparing for him.
Well, he's 16-1. Door number three. Yep. He's 16-1 now against the NFC. I'll take door number two, Monty, because listen, Lamar's playing at a high level. We said it. If you paid attention to the game in Jacksonville, the game in London against the Titans, he was sensational in that game. He threw the ball as well as I've ever seen him throw it. They're throwing the ball over the middle field, which is what I've been screaming about. He's able to make plays, throw in there. He's got time to throw. His offensive line's healthy. This is all about Lamar Jackson being great. And he's always been great. I've said it for years. He can throw the football. This idea he can't is ridiculous. I've watched him throw it in college, but he throws it at best in the middle of the field.
All right, last question. And it goes to the Atlanta situation in Tampa Bay. Bijan Robinson has debilitating migraines the night before, still shaken by them on Sunday morning. The Falcons say nothing about this to anyone, the NFL, or release this. And then when questioned on Tuesday, Art Smith, very, very dismissive of the fact that these things need to get reported and, you know, kind of took a shot at fantasy football and gamblers there in a very smug way only a child of billionaires can. Are you concerned at all about this situation?
Yeah, I mean, we should reveal it. Everybody should know. We should have an open forum. I mean, and he's going to get fined for it. He knows better than that. I mean, look, first of all, he's the only coach in America that has a back that averages 5 yards a carry, and he's given it to the back that averages 3.2 yards a carry. Somebody needs to ask him that question besides the injury report. Hey, Artie, why the hell are we giving the ball to Algier at 3.2 and the other guy's got it at 5.0? Somebody explain. Is it the headaches? I get it. I understand now, but it's ridiculous. He's got to report it. He should know better.
Well, in this instance, even if you had a feeling or thought or hoped that he would work his way out of it and be better the next day, you still should report that that's
questionable.
That it's a thought that he might not be.
Or probable, whatever, but there's something there.
Why did they dress him?
There must be some designation.
The only reason they dressed him is because they didn't want to go through the embarrassment of he wasn't on the injury report. He didn't play. I don't think he was in there for a play.
He was for a couple plays, right?
He ran a couple of times later in the game.
Yeah, but he didn't make his first appearance until late in the in the first half. So
maybe the headache wore off. Good medicine.
Awesome stuff as always, Michael. You're the man. Appreciate Mike Somich joining us earlier today.
Thank you, Mike Palm. Mike, you're the best.
Great to see you again.
Excellent questions as always. Coming up next here on VSiN, Sharp Money. Keep it locked here all day, every day. Good Thursday night football matchup. Good is a word that we can use loosely.